Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Yeah, whacking Cole makes me sad for that.
Well, she just subbed in chat, so hi, Cole.
How do you sub in chat? What does that even mean?
Twitch.
Yeah, I have used Twitch and know nothing of subbing. I'm just like, hey, someone entered the room. Ain't that some shit? And that's enough for me. So.
Oh, they have like subscriptions and bits. You basically get like special badges and emotes that you can use when you sub to somebody.
Okay, because I always assumed like the subbing was just like a literal, like I have a subscription, which means now I always know when you're on or something.
That's a follow.
Yeah, that's a follow.
That's a subscription on YouTube.
Yeah.
See, all these, they take one word and give it five meanings. No, what the fuck's going on? But the important part is, hi, Cole.
The important part is every time somebody subs, you yell, fucking yeah.
Oh, I do like that. I like that.
Even episodes you're not on, we get you on.
It's almost like I've been risen from the grave, from the dead, beyond the pale.
Fucking yeah.
It's a good place. It's a good way to be, though, to be desired for your fucking yeah antics.
Cole, I'm guessing everything is working. I would assume she would have said something otherwise.
If not, that's good.
Uh-oh. All right, well, let's get this started. I am going to start recording. We will get this show going. Everybody ready?
Yeah. Do I sound okay?
Actually, you sound a little roomier.
Yeah, I do. Probably.
Why?
And that's just how it's going to be tonight. Because my mother-in-law is sleeping in the room with my computer in it.
Ah.
Today I'm going to review a specific game. But I have to be very quiet because my mother-in-law is sleeping.
Well, that means I'm not on my computer. But it also means I'm keeping my voice down because everyone in my house is sleeping. Very early.
Some expert mode here going on for you, then. Like,
I can't say shit, but I'm going to try.
Oh, God. All right.
I can't
well,
be excited for this game, but it's okay because I don't want to be.
It's not good.
Is he lying or making a joke? We'll find out.
I hope you're excited about this one.
Honestly, I know what he's reviewing, but I don't know. He's going to know more because he's played it, but rumor mill is he could potentially not be excited for it. So I'm looking forward to what he has to say.
Yeah, all right.
We'll find out when the show starts. I'm going to start recording, and we'll get the show going.
Always, you could have recorded all that. It would have been great.
There's no good intro. There's no good intro. We need an intro.
You can pre-record the intro to be like, hi, I'm Joe. This is the SML Podcast. A bunch of gibberish that we spout that you recorded. And then it's just like, hi, Purnell's here. You got to just do it all.
Man, you're forcing me into keeping all of this. Son of a bitch.
Every time.
Sometimes you just do a cold open.
Yeah.
Sometimes it merits it. Is this one of those times? That's up to you.
No, I'll just find somewhere to start the episode. But, yeah, it's a party cast. No Cole this episode. It is just me, along with Purnell, Chris, and Tim.
It's not really a party. It's a casual gathering. Yeah. Once it's down to four, the party's over.
I mean, you know,
by
at this stage of the pandemic,
internet law.
Yeah. It's a soiree cast.
Casual get together
cast.
Oh shit! What the fuck?
Complete with vittles.
So right. Tim has to be quiet.
Yeah, I have to be quiet. I have to keep it low key. Everyone's sleeping. I picked up my mother-in-law, and it turned out to be midnight at the airport last night.
Oh, geez.
I woke up my child to bring along because he was very excited to see his grandmother for the first time in 18 months.
Oh.
And my wife had to wake up for work at like 4 in the morning.
Oh.
which when my mother-in-law also woke up at 4 in the morning because she hadn't seen her daughter in 18 months. So everybody is very sleepy, except for me. I'm here on the SML podcast.
Do you wish you were sleeping?
I took a nap. So, I'm the most okay person in this house as far as sleep goes. Because, yeah, I took a little nappy nap this afternoon. I have an easy time falling asleep, unlike my wife. But when I'm ready to sleep, I am out. It is a skill that I have gained at some point.
I envy you. Anytime I lay down, it takes me a long time to fall asleep.
Yeah, no, I fall asleep within like minutes. I can fall asleep in chairs and cars. I just like have to. It's just a whole mental like relaxation thing. Like, and sometimes if I just fall asleep for like 15-20 minutes, that's all I need.
Oh,
yeah. Sometimes even less than that. Just like
you're one of those power nappers, is what that is.
Yeah, I can just go out and then come right back and I'm good. Oh, didn't used to be like that. I don't know what made it happen, whether it was a force of will or becoming a father. One of those things. It was just like, well, now I have to get the sleep where I can get it. So I'm going to train my body.
That was a skill that you would have learned living in a house with a bunch of other guys. You just get the naps wherever you can.
Well, the skill you get from living in a house with a bunch of other guys is that you can wake up very easily and quickly if you think there's shenanigans going on. That's the other side.
Shenanigans in your household? No.
No.
Well, that never happens.
What is this?
It's some cockamamie kabooly-booly there.
Brunel, how was your week?
It's been all right, though. I think it's funny now, like, I'm still trying to do gym stuff despite the fact that we're in a damn heat wave, and I'm starting to question.
Yeah, what the hell is wrong with you?
How hot is it there?
It was in the 90s today, which,
Portland. Yeah, it's not Portland.
It's not friggin' Portland, but, you know, it's still hot for this time of summer. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, I'm in the rotation. I got to keep up the momentum. I got to keep going. Whether it's doing anything for me or not, I still fucking couldn't tell you. But I still
work
keep
out
going.
So I can cool off.
But the thing is, like, I sometimes question, like, would I get the same results if I just lie down on the street and let the sun bake me? Because I'm just dripping everywhere regardless of what I do. So it's like, what am I doing here? Like, I could just go out in the middle of the street, do some shoe shine.
Not getting skin cancer. That's what you're doing.
Oh, no, the melanin, baby. I say that knowing that the reality of it is that you still are susceptible to skin cancer, but I like to keep the myth alive in my heart that being black makes me immune to skin cancer by way of the sun.
It's your superpower.
Give me something, damn it. I'll take that over Matt. Actually, no, I want magnetism too. Fuck it. Give me both of them.
But Magneto is master of mag.
I don't have to be a master. I could be an apprentice. I'll be apprentice of magnetism. I'm good for that.
Journeyman.
I'm a journeyman. I'll be a journeyman there. I'm working my way up. Second journeyman. This is all good. Let me move some things. I can move bolts and nuts, and then eventually I can move nuts and bolts together, and then I can actually move tools, like physical tools. I don't know where I'll get to where I can start moving cars or anything, but if I keep working and try really hard and just keep getting, you know, whatever,
parts are gone. I move cars as long as I have the key.
Oh, that's not a power, that's a skill.
I've had that skill since I was 15.
I had to go to the magnet thing because despite, you know, I'm just going to bring it up without going into the craziness beyond is like, I got into a discussion with a guy the other day. He tried to get me into the mindset like, you can't dismiss people who think vaccines give them magnetism because you have no proof it doesn't. I'm like, I don't need it. It's fucking stupid. But, you know, maybe you got a point. I'll look into it a little more. I want to see what the videos are that they're posting. I want to see the court cases that they're filing and all this. So I've been doing a little bit of diving into cases of magnetism. And
why are you doing this to yourself?
The thing about it is, like, I'm a goober when it comes to, like, debating and discussion, and that I just like doing it as long as the people aren't just fucking assholes about it. So it's not even that I need to believe it to look into it so much. It's just like, okay, this person's seriously claiming that I need to be more informed about it before I make a distinction. I disagree, but you know what? I'll ride that wave. I want to see, because I never really dug into it simply because it's fucking absurd. And if it were more important than what it's been, it would have been, like, more vocalized in some respect, as opposed to, like, somebody who knows a guy who knows a guy who posts a YouTube video, did it, got it. You know, like, no, it's crazy. So, but I was like, you know, I'll look into it. And what it's been is people who are like, I magnetize, check this out. And they'll, like, put, like, a watch battery on their arm for, like, a second, and they go, well, fuck, and shut their video off. Or there'll be a person in court that's like, I'm magnetized, see, I can take this key, right? And it'll stick to my neck when I do this. Okay, when I do, okay, but this time it's gonna, you know, you know what I mean, though. Yeah, it's like, no, you fucker, it's not doing it. And to be blunt, if, and if somebody, the guy also says, like, so what would you say to a person if you knew them personally that said it's happened to them? Like, well, first I want to see it. And then two, I'd ask if they've been to a doctor, and they say they don't want to go because they don't trust them. Like, well, you trust me. Here's some whiskey. Here's a wash rag. Let's soak it and get you stabbed up. We're going to cut that chip out. No, I don't want to. It's like, but you're not a foot.
This is one of the weirdest tangents you've gone on, Pernell. This is.
I zoned out.
Stop, Chris. How was your week?
Don't ask about me. This is my favorite episode. Please continue, Pernell.
Tim zoned out. Chris is especially engaged. I can appreciate that. But yeah, like it's just a ridiculous whole thing that's going on there. And I feel like after today, I did my due. I did my looking. No one tell me you're fucking magnetized from this shit, because I'm going to scream. I'm going to scream and holler in the most hysterical way. And it'll be great.
Well, but don't actually, do it
no. For now, I'm magnetized from this shit.
Well, I don't trust you, Tim, so it's okay.
Oh, wow.
But do you trust his reviews?
Absolutely, because that man knows games.
Is that our segue?
That was magnetized.
Maybe seeing the difference when I'm carefully extracting the iron from your bloodstream next I see you.
Shit, I was drinking tea at the time. That's great. Actually, I don't know.
That is great for you, because there's no iron in that.
True, because if there were, fuck. just more for you to siphon, babe. Oh, I love how, like, we had this segue. It was good to go, and then Joe missed it by a nanosecond.
No, I stopped him.
Yeah, and with the interception.
With threats of iron siphonage.
Juked him.
Hard left. So anyway, reviews. Should we get to those?
Magical. Yes.
Yes, we should. You shouldn't ask. You should just do.
Well, he's polite. I want everyone to like me. No. Listen, fuckers, it's review time.
Well, I used to want to
be like that.
I don't know anymore. Yeah, I don't know anymore.
I like a podcast host that'll take command.
It's a man who knows how to take
charge. I tried that for 8 years and it's just not working. Someone else needs to lead this shit. Who wants the notes?
I don't know. Wait, if I
can. Notes?
Honestly, you don't want me leading any of them, because you talk about tangents now. Fuck. You'll never see the end of them.
Pernell Tangent Cast.
Welcome. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about.
He won't even finish the intro. Paul will be sitting there for like an hour waiting to be introduced. No, she wouldn't. She would not wait an hour to be introduced. She would jump in somewhere.
See, now I'm thinking of a podcast that's just like one person, like a host and Pernell, and the host just sources like random prompts, says something to Pernell, and just lets him go. That's it. That's the podcast. And whenever he stops, well, if it's really quick, which seems unlikely, then maybe there could be another prompt to the episode. But if not, that's just the episode.
New topic. Okay, we got 15 in the queue. We just want to see Pernell ramble about them. Let's go. I would be all about that.
This will be 2 months of content.
We're literally on a podcast talking about better podcast ideas.
Yes.
Talking about podcasts we want to hear. Ones that we want each other to be on.
Yeah. Unfortunate situation that we're in, isn't it?
guess we just got to do this one cool podcast we're already on.
Instead, we got to talk about video games, like the first game to talk about tonight, which is called Disgaea 6 Defiance of Destiny, developed by Nipponichi Software, published by NIS America, released June 29th on the Switch for $59.99. Can a mere netherworld zombie rise up and destroy a god? Find out in the newest installment of the Disgaea series. Features such as super reincarnation, 3D visuals, a first for the series, and adjustable gameplay settings make this the perfect game for both new and old fans of the series. Tim, tell us about your time with this one.
New in Disgaea 6, 3D graphics.
Yeah.
That's finally wild. For those that might not be familiar with Disgaea, which you should be familiar with it, because I reviewed at least two of these games on the show in the last couple of years, and I'm sure that some others have rolled through at the same time. Disgaea is a series that started, like, God, almost 20 years ago at this point. Jesus.
In ancient times.
Fuck. God. It's like an anime tactics game set in a netherworld of demons and ne'er-do-wells with quirky writing, lots of opportunity for grinding. You make the numbers get big, and lots of replayability and just lots of stuff you can do. So, hey, sixth installment. I guess the big new thing is this game now has 3D character models in it, which is wild. When I reviewed Disgaea 4 like a while back, it was when it was getting released on Switch, I was like, wow, they still are using sprites. They were better sprites than in the initial PS2 releases, but still I was like, wow, sprites. But here, finally, yeah, 3D character models. That's, it's still kind of the same stuff, but they're in 3D now. It's kind of a mixed bag in that, like, on one hand, it's like refreshing that they're not sprites anymore. They're still using the same character designs, which I guess I won't knock as someone who's played every Mega Ten game for the last 20 years. they've been pretty much using the same character design. They have been using the same character design since even before I started playing.
They're actually looking to finally switch him up, and people are like, don't you do that!
Yeah, calm down. That unto itself is not a big deal. They have added in battles, like, when you use a special move, it kind of, like, has its own cutscene now, which you watch it once and you're like, okay. You watch it twice and you're like, okay. And then from then on, you just skip them. So that is kind of annoying. That's not something they needed to do in going 3D, but it is something they did. It just kind of cuts away from the action and it's like, whatever. So I don't know if you'd necessarily say, oh, this is because they're in 3D now or what. But the overall graphical quality of this game is questionable. It has, how on, like, I guess I should say current gen games, Series X and PS5 games, and even before that, like going back to the half step consoles, you'd see games that would have like a performance graphics mode or a quality, like fidelity graphics mode. Everyone's familiar with this by now. But this also has that, which is weird to see on a Switch game, and a game that was made specifically for Switch. I don't believe it's on any. Is it on anything else? Kind of zoned out during
the only Switch.
Yeah. Only Switch. So, like, if you put it on performance mode, yeah, the frame rate gets pretty solid, but then, like, it just, the resolution is just terrible. It is just, like, so blurry. If you put it on the highest fidelity, like, yeah, the picture will look crisp and everything's standing still, but the frame rate sucks donkey balls. So I just kind of put it on the balanced mode to get the best of both worlds, where it's, lower resolution, but it the frame rate holds up enough so it's like, okay, this is fine. It's not great, but it's fine. For people that have a previous familiarity with the series, like, this is more of the same. for better or worse. Like, it's the same style of writing that I personally feel like I'm a bit over at this point. It is those same character designs. Like, it's the same abilities on those character classes that they've had for 20 years. It is the, you know, your hub world looks goddamn near identical to the one in 4, at least. I didn't play 5, but I'm just like, this all looks intensely familiar, which is crazy because this is the first new game in 6 years. Six years. But this game also seems, I feel like at some point in the series, maybe even starting as early, I mean, it was definitely there in the first one. It really started to go there more, I think, in 2, and just kind of that bent of the game being less about, like, the tactics of what you're doing in the battles themselves and more about, like, all the shenanigans you're doing outside of battles to power up your characters to insane heights. And there is just, like, so many people standing around in your netherworld that you can interact with, like, different, basically, you know, representing different systems that you can interact with to grind out more stuff for your characters and power them up in different ways. Like, you know, the item worlds are still there. The Dark Assembly is there again, of course. That's always fun. The politics of the netherworld. There are, and I'm not sure how many of these are, like, brand new. I know some of them obviously have been around for a while. They have the guy who will, you can buy abilities and skills from. There's a juice bar okay. for helping enhance your characters. There is squads for assigning characters to different, like, little mini groups with different benefits. There's a there's a quest giver who will just give you, like, a mess of side quests. There's research related to the item worlds. That, and that's 7 people standing around, not including the item shop. But I feel the big thing they added to this game is that they've made it so you can just, like, automate your characters in combat. Pernell, did they have this in 5? I have to defer to you.
That's one of the big new things they promoted for this one.
Yeah, this is the big new thing. So you can just set your characters to auto battle. To just, like, fly through, not even play encounters at this point. At this point, you are just letting your team of fucking murderous monsters, like, loose to do their thing all on their own. But you can set them up with, like, you know, kind of like logic commands, where it's like, you know, so for, like, a healer character, it's like, okay, if another character is hurt, cast heal on them. Like, if not, you know, attack nearest enemy. Or something like that. So you can program basically the AI and how you want them to behave in your battles. So that way you can just throw them out there, press the start button to auto battle, and just, like, let shit run wild. You know,
is that kind of like how it was in Final Fantasy 12?
That is yes. That's kind of like how it was in Final Fantasy 12, and that you'd set up your gambits and
gambits. That was the word.
Yeah, things would kind of auto-magically play out. Dragon Age, actually, the first one at least, had something similar you could do as well. Like, there's a few games that have dabbled with systems like this. And it's just for Disgaea, and in this game, it feels like another step away from, like, you know, actually controlling and making your decisions for your characters in combat and fully moving towards... Well, this is all about exploiting the systems behind the scenes to just make your characters overpowered and make the numbers go up. And the numbers in this game already start very high. They start in the tens of thousands.
Well, I should mention this in case you don't know it, because this is something worth noting for the changes. So, to lend to your point, one of the things they were trying to promote in this game as being a new feature was, if you remember, the old games used to be like, you can get to level 9,999. Mm-hmm. It's fucking wild. Now, you can get to 99,999,999. And that's not an exaggeration. That's the actual number they're saying you can reach.
Yeah. It feels excessive and kind of silly when you start out.
It feels like a bit much.
Yeah. Like, because at the end of the day, like, you don't even see, like, a full 5-digit number when you hit something. It's like, oh, you hit them for 39K. So it's basically a 2-digit number. There's just, like, a soft inflation going on at the bottom that's, like, you know, multiplying it by 10,000 right off the bat. So, of course, yes, you can multiply the top level by, that might be more than 10,000. But, yeah, so that's how, ooh, what the fuck? Oh, I thought I heard something outside.
Someone heard you talk about the sky. It was like, what?
Yeah, I thought they were like, throwing rocks at my window. There was a cat out there a second ago.
Maybe from Nippon Ichi's out know. There.
Yeah, I don't know a cat. Well, I don't like.
Don't talk shit about our games.
Hey, I'm not pooping on it necessarily. I'm more my feeling. Like everything about the game is well, the least solid thing is graphical capabilities, but the systems that are there, in the battles and outside the battles are still as solid as they ever were. It's just for me personally, I'm just not sure if I have never been as into a Disc Gaea game as I was the first one. And there was like some degree of magic that they never managed to recapture for me after that. I played like a fair amount of 2 and a fair amount of 4 when I reviewed it and not the other 2. But it just like, especially with the writing and seeing kind of the same character models and the same feel of the battles, it doesn't feel in the moment to moment all that different from it did. From the way it did 20 years ago, because the difference that they are, the new things they are putting into the game are kind of all on the back end in how you spend like various currencies that you accrue to try to, build out your characters and exploit them and make the numbers go up. Yeah. So moment to moment, it still feels very much the same, even though they have added stuff. And it really just depends on how much you are looking to like engage all those systems to make the numbers, just make a team of unstoppable badasses that now you don't even need to control.
Some people want to be God.
Yeah. It's weird. Like there's one thing to say, like I remember like when Final Fantasy 12 was the thing and people talked about how much they hated the game is for that reason. I was like, I like the game. It's because, it covers the mundane element of battle, and I can just come out of it for the more complicated stuff. And I stand true to that thought for that game. And yet for some reason, I feel differently about it in this game. Though, I wonder if I would change my mind once I started doing Item World shit again, because that's where the tedium
always kick in. Yeah. Once the tedium is in, there is something to be said, and I very much enjoyed Final Fantasy XII. There is something to be said for the satisfaction of setting up a well-oiled automated machine in an RPG and just like watching it play out and seeing like your commands actually work without having to do too much interaction. Like I'm not knocking that system. It just kind of is what it is. Pardon me.
Well, yeah. It being that it is $59.99 on the Switch. There's no word on any other platforms. I gotta know, is there any features in this game that make it stand out as being a Switch feature, or is this something that, we're gonna see hit the PS4, PS5 in a year?
I'd have to think it'll be coming out on other things. Like, there's nothing, other than you can pick it up and carry it with you, the feature that Switch confers to every game upon it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something. I would bet dollars to donuts they're doing the reverse element this time. So, for those in the know, every Disc Gaea game always ends up getting like a updated version a couple years down the line. And usually it's to like a portable console. It's like Disc Gaea is the complete, and it's always on the Vita or the DS or the Vita or the DS or the PSP. Mm. But now it started on the Switch. So, who's to say Disc Gaea 6 complete, rather than say it won't exist, won't just go to a more powerful machine?
Yeah.
Instead of a less powerful machine.
Yeah.
PlayStation. Let's be real. PlayStation.
Yeah. I didn't mention that there is, the surprise Game Pass release. You never know, man.
They could use some now.
Octopath Traveler came out on there.
Maybe right? PC. So come on. Maybe Come PC on. Windows 10 release, but
I'm sure.
Well, the first Disc Gaea is on Windows 10 PC in Game Pass.
Yeah. So
I guess it's not completely out of the question, but $60 on it now. What do you think?
So my And I should mention there is one of the 80,000 people that stand around in your hub world has a DLC store name right over it. So when you say that, Pernell, like it has my mind turning that, like, hey, if you wait in maybe like a year and a half or so, there will be a version for another console with all the stuff included that maybe runs better, which is arguably the biggest problem with this game, is just that the performance of it is kind of shifty. From a quality, just overall game standpoint, it's kind of like a tepid recommendation. Like it sits on the fine line of try by. I think Disgaea fans will, if you've been rolling with the series for five games and you're having a blast with them, like you're gonna have a blast with this one. It's not gonna change any hearts and minds from people who, you know, didn't like the series to begin with. But the ultimate, cop-out answer is that there is a demo available on the Switch where you can play the first two chapters and then carry over your data. So just play that and figure it out.
Download the demo.
It's a yellow green.
You're welcome, Ness.
They need the money.
Obviously, hundreds of hours. It's obviously there from a time value standpoint. It's not going to let you down.
Cool.
But there are some questions and there are some considerations to be made. So
yeah, I fully expect that we'll see this on PlayStation next year in a complete edition. I'm sure it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that used to be like the series home base. You know, I remember Disgaea 3 was a early PlayStation 3 game, which is why I never played that one. Early-ish PlayStation 3, at least. I didn't have a PS3 at the time, so that's exactly and precisely where I fell off.
Oh, there we go. All right, well, that is it for you, Tim. We will let you get going so you can return to your sleeping family.
Yeah, well, hopefully, I'll stop talking and continue not waking anybody up.
Do you have any final words?
No, I don't. No final words. Nothing. I have nothing.
Okay, bye.
I have nothing. Okay, bye.
All right, next game to talk about is called Dark Deity, developed by Sword and Axe LLC, published by Freedom Games, released June 15th on Steam for $24.99. Command legendary heroes to reshape a land fractured by broken oaths, reckless wars, and secret arcane powers. Claim ancient artifacts and powerful weapons to empower your cast of 30 voice playable characters as they form bonds and battle their way to become legends. Pernell, tell us about your time with Dark Deity.
So Dark Deity is a game that I am very glad I ended up getting by chance, because I had never heard of it. I put in for E3 and I got an email like, hey, we got this game. Would you like to check it out? I'm like, yes. Yes, I would. Just to see if you'll give it to me. And they did. So I was like, well, now I'm going to have to follow through with it. But guess what? This game is legit. But to give you the base statement for it before even talking about the game proper, this is Fire Emblem for people who miss Fire Emblem, as in like classic Fire Emblem style gameplay, as opposed to like the later stuff they've been doing. But a little bit more into it. So the gameplay takes place over stages that there's no like world map that you traverse or select nodes or anything. It's a story that plays out over chapters, and you'll end up in battles the game sets up for you or pre-establishes for you. After you have, you know, a general story sequence. And when the battle kicks in, you are placed onto a grid-based map where you have to select your units. Early on, I just dump them out there, but eventually you have to choose who you want and ship them around and stuff like that. And you are tasked with leading the charge. Every level has its own sort of, like, requirements, typically ranging from defeat the boss, but there's some other ones like, you know, hold down the fort and not die, or rescue ex-prisoners, or holy shit, what the hell's going on? But survive anyway. And I say that because there have definitely been a few levels where I actually said, like, holy shit, what's going on? Why is I gotta live? But
I want to see that as one of the reviews on this Steam page. It says, holy shit, what the hell's going on? Pernell Vaughn, the SML podcast.
But at the crux, once you have your units on the field, they generally kind of carry the base archetypes at their core. Like, you know, you'll have like melee units, rangers, like, you know, or archer types or healer types or mage types, rider types and all. But they have a wealth of stats similar to how Fire Emblem works. And when you level up with a character, they will get experience points random based on RNG, using aptitude levels to determine, you know, the odds of them getting a stat bump in a category or whatnot. It's honestly been refreshing to play because there's a few things they've changed about this compared to the typical formula that I ended up really enjoying. For one, weapons don't break. They don't deteriorate. They don't do anything. Secondly, you have an inventory of 5 items. However, in this game, you have that inventory of 5, and you have 4 weapons. Every character gets 4 weapons, and they always have them. They do not take up their inventory slots, which, for those who've played Fire Emblem, know how much of a pain in the ass that tends to be when you're like, I got to use 2 items. I want to have 2 different weapons with this guy, but can't carry him. And the different weapons that they all get, they are all kind of broken into categories like power, finesse, crit, and like something else. In that sense, you want to like always kind of choose the right weapon for the job when you're in a skirmish with an enemy. So ultimately what's going to end up happening though is when you get into a battle, you're just going to cycle through which weapon does what you want and then select it. But nonetheless, it's still cool to be able to say, I have options whenever I get into a fight. It's not just what weapon I have equipped that has enough, you know, uses left to not be wasted. Because that was one of the biggest element issues I had with Fire Emblem was like, I don't want to use this only gets 5 uses. I got to save it for a good opportunity or whatever. And also, every character, so they have their base classes, like I said before, but every individual character also has a skill that's unique to them, that makes them a unique character. Drink. Fuck! I got to come up with a better word than that. especially, you know...
No, you can use it. We just...
get really drunk when I do. You'll get really drunk. But they all have them, those characters that they can use that are exclusive to them. And it is actually kind of cool because once you level up to level 10, you will get to the promotion phase. Typically in a Fire Emblem game, the promotion is a special item. And you also can choose between doing it between like levels 10 and 20. And there's always like that whole thing where like you maximize your stat gains by holding on till 20. Which, for people like me who want to min-max everything, it's a pain in the ass to have to wait when you've got the promotion ready to go. This game says, no, you're level 10. Promote right the fuck now. You have to do it. And on a cool note, though, unlike in like Fire Emblem, whereas usually you got like one promotion, and then eventually you might have like a secret promotion if you could find the means to do so. Or every once in a while, you might eventually branch up to like a second tier. This game, every character can promote to 4 different trees. So there are a lot more class options in this game. And it's kind of cool to be like, okay, I'm going to have to decide on which one, but they all seem pretty useful. Just, I need to figure out which one might work the best for the character with their unique skill. So I feel like that makes it a little bit easier to choose, which is good because when the promotion happens, it happens immediately. If you're in the middle of a battle, you have to choose right then and there. There is no go back to the hub and then do your promotions. So people like me who can be a little indecisive, yeah, it's kind of rough when you promote in the middle of a battle. You're stuck trying to decide what to do. But I digress, because at the end of the day, that's a me problem, not a game's problem. I like the voice work for the characters. When they say voice, it's not like they're talking over all the individual like story sequences. However, it's just enough voice to give them characters. So, like, if they do like a crit attack in a battle, they'll have their little kind of like, you chose a bad day to be a hero. And like, scat them. It's like, oh, there's personality. I can hear it in their voice. and if they level up, they have quotes based on how well or how poorly the RNG treats them on a level up, stuff like that. And it's honestly just kind of nice to have that character, that, you know, personality on the characters. Because like when I use characters in this game, I'm like, I've already hit that moment. I'm like, I like this character. Actually, I've met a character yet that I didn't like. But I have met characters I like more because of the voices that they gave them when they you crits and stuff like that. It's impolite to stare. Stab. Like, yeah. You tell them. It is impolite to stare. So I feel like they nailed all that stuff down. The combat is fun. The maps have some pretty nice gimmicks sometimes. Like, even early on, they get you with a freaking like warp gate gimmick, which was like, wow, okay, that's not something I'm used to seeing in like a game like this, but okay, let's go with it and see how it plays. And it plays out well. I should mention this too. In between battles, however, if you don't have like a back-to-back battles, which happens sometimes, you'll go to like a hub where you can do like conversations to increase bonds, and the bond stats Joe's like, "Damn, you born bitch."
Oh, that wasn't me. That was totally Chris.
Chris! At two, Chris! At two!
What did I say?
Sighing into the microphone.
Chris is like, I didn't think they would hear it.
I actually didn't know I was unmuted.
That's hilarious.
In my defense, I wasn't listening. I sometimes sigh because I forget to breathe.
Oh,
I'm the same way, so I know exactly how you feel. Ashley's always like, "What's wrong?" I'm like, "Nothing. I'm just breathing."
Well, you guys keep doing the size because we want you around for the long haul. Also, you don't want on your tombstone, "Here lies Chris. He forgot to breathe.
I really hope somebody puts that on there.
If it happens, they better, which is why you better not do it, because we'll mock you after you die for doing that. Come on. Keep breathing, damn it. Game, right?
Yeah, Dark Deity. It's $25. What do you think about it?
Wait, last thing. I got to do this last thing. This is part of the game. In between battles, you go to a hub where you have like conversations based on where people were paired up with in skirmishes to increase their bonds by way of conversations. You can purchase items, and you can spend tier tokens to purchase upgrades for each weapon that the characters have. So you don't have to buy new weapons. You just upgrade what you've got at all times. One complaint that I have about the game, it needs a suspend option because battles can run like 45 minutes, an hour, but there's no suspend option. So if you have to cut it off, whoops. So please add a suspend option. It doesn't have to be a save scum of a one, just one that is temporary. I'm cool with that. But other than that, even with that, Nanju, this is a buy it game for sure. This game is fantastic. It's a lot of fun. It's amazing that it truly just kind of flew under the radar like it did because more people need to hear about it and play it. It's a good game.
Cool. Nah, I looked at it on Steam. Sword and Axe Freedom Games, if you're listening, console. I'm sure Switch would love it. It would go great on Xbox. Game Pass, perfect.
Actually, this would go great on the Xbox, believe it or not. Like, it would be a... Like, it would fill a niche that I don't think is really being handled right now. There's that one game I reviewed last week. But that's not a Fire Emblem like at all. That's his own like SRPG beast. Yeah. But I think this would totally do well there.
Yeah, we'll find out in the future. But next game to talk about is called A Tale of Synapse, The Chaos Theories, developed by Sorus Lab, published by Tessura Games, released June 30th on the Switch for $17.99. Help Sai and Nero get out of a world where logic, mathematics, and puzzles will be your allies in a 2D platform game with a unique aesthetic. Chris, tell us about A Tale of Synapse, The Chaos Theories.
Actually, the game is good. I just had to breathe.
Perfection.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Okay.
The game.
Yeah. This game is a 2D action adventure platformvania. I couldn't not say it's a Metroidvania.
Thank you. Don't you dare.
How about platformvania? Is that okay? Well, it's definitely a Mathylvania because it has that. In fact, that is the genre I'm going to assign it. It's a Mathylvania. So you play as Nero. I want to say it's Nero, but the E has an accent over it, which I think means it's Nero. I don't actually know. I think it was made in France or something like that. And it the English isn't the best on it, but I mean, it's functional. So Nero is hanging around a library and falls, like, I guess accidentally, I guess he just comes across a book of like ancient chaotic magic or something like that in the basement where he wasn't supposed to go or something. Or I think he was supposed to go there and like sweep it up, and then I don't know. Either way, this book opens up this giant hole in the floor, which he falls down, and then finds a magical jellyfish named Sai, and she acts as the kind of magical fairy companion, except that she is a jellyfish, to our hero, who must now get out of the underground kind of thing and save the world somehow. What it is that you go along one of four like fantastical type you know environments, and but it's not purely exploration based. Like it actually is divided into stages, but there are unlockable like powers that allow you to traverse the terrain in different ways, and therefore it does kind of meet the genre. But what's you know, you get those as you go along, and also when you defeat enemies, they drop orbs of light, which you must collect, and if you can collect enough of them, then you get to unlock skills that are attached to whatever power-ups you have unlocked so far. So they're kind of like experience points, except that if you get hit, you lose one, so it's a little bit like money and a little bit like experience all at the same time.
Hmm.
But the big thing about this game is that frequently, and I do mean frequently, you'll be exploring along, and then you'll come across a closed-off area where, you know, with magical, like, just, you know, magical clamps kind of keeping you from being able to ascend past wherever you are. And typically, the way to get through that is to solve a kind of logic or math problem. And, so, and they have everything stylized in a way, like, there's numbers everywhere in this game. They're just, like, in the background and just, like, kind of baked into the scenery. So, like, this is very much, like, a world of logic, as they say. And, because, like I said, the whole thing's very fantastical. And, so, a lot of what is involved is moving pieces around, different platforms or whatever. Some platforms, like, you have to drop in a certain amount of boxes to kind of represent a, like, fill-in-the-blank for a math number. So, like, if it's, you know, one side will be already completed, it'll be, like, three in one block and three in the other, and then, like, it'll say, you know, six. And then you know that the two platforms mean that you're adding those together, and so you put the right blocks in there to, like, add up to, like, seven. Or something like that. They start off really easy, and then they get like into actual like kind of geometry and algebra questions, and like, you know, stuff that's a little tougher. And but like the way that you kind of like, there's different ways that you can kind of get clues as to what you're supposed to do. One of which is to, I guess, eat knowledge apples that are just kind of laying around, and then that gives Sai the ability to like kind of tell you what the next puzzle is going to be like or something like that. And the other way is that you can push a button to use white vision, which isn't a racist thing. It's like it just washes the screen over, where, you know, it's one of those things like a kind of x-ray vision or like just alternate reality vision where you can kind of see things a little differently, and then that kind of gives you a clue, which is pretty cool. And yeah, so a lot of it is running, jumping, fighting, you know, enemies, including bosses, big shadowy bosses. And then nearly half of that time is like, you know, kind of figuring out these logic puzzles. Oh, I was going to say, the way you move those blocks is to use the right stick to control Sai, the jellyfish, as she is able to like actually move the blocks, and she can go anywhere because she's a flying jellyfish. And in an interesting,
Makes sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. I mean, flying jellyfish, they can grab blocks and put them in platforms that you can't reach. And the other interesting thing about it is that should you choose, you can actually play this game two-player and have the second player control the jellyfish. So, interestingly, that harkens back to a very, very much like a Castlevania clone on the NES back before there were Metroid elements, but there's a game called Eight Eyes where you controlled this dude with a sword instead of a whip, but other than that. And he also had a bird that you could control either with the first controller by pushing like a certain button combination or by plugging in a second controller. And the bird would help you solve puzzles. So it's interesting to see that that element brought back to it. But yeah.
Cool. Well, this game is sitting at $18 on the Switch. What do you think of it?
I think that that is a worthwhile purchase for fans of the logic puzzles for sure. The actual platforming bits, I mean, because it's not traveling around an overall arcing map, you know, it's not going to scratch too many itches on the exploration part of things, but it's interesting. The aesthetics are good. I really like the music. And I do like the puzzles, actually. I enjoy math and logic puzzles. And there's a lot. Like, there's a lot of stages per these four worlds. And I'm sure it unlocks, you know, maybe like another world or something after that. I don't know. I didn't beat the game. But there's a lot of content here, and I appreciate that. And I also appreciate when a game just, like, straight up, you know, gives you math problems.
Yeah, so, and
I'm going to say it's a buy it for people who are into the puzzle aspect of it. For like Metroidvania fans or whatever, it's like a recommended try it.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Epistory Typing Chronicles, developed by Fishing Cactus and Cubic Games, published by Cubic Games. Released July 2nd on the Switch for $14.99. Epistory is an atmospheric adventure typing game that tells the story of a writer lacking inspiration who asks her muse to help her write her latest book. Brunel, tell us about your time with Epistory Typing Chronicles.
Before I officially start, I have to lead with something I came across with this game, which is originally this was a Steam game, and somebody on the Steam forums made a comment about it and was like, hey, this game really would be awesome on something like the Switch. You should port it. And the guy got kind of like dog pop up. He's like, the Switch? How the hell would that work? It needs a keyboard. That's stupid. It wouldn't play on the Switch. Well, guess what? Guess
what I'm playing? Here it is.
It's on the Switch. So I guess it kind of happened. And the funny part is, how did they get it to work? Well, by letting you use a keyboard. This is probably the first video game on the Switch that allows usage of a USB keyboard to play it. That's not playing that game. But you don't need the keyboard per se, so if you want to do like handheld mode and stuff like that and just use the buttons on the Joy-Cons, you can do that. But my response to that, admittedly, is why in the hell would you do that if you can play it with a keyboard? Because this is a typing game. And it is an honestly fun typing game at that. It has basically starts out in an overworld. The entire world is done by way of papercraft. So papercraft forests, papercraft lakes, even papercraft monsters. And as you were playing as a little girl who I perceived to be the writer, riding on the back of a fox, who is probably your muse, you know. And they are exploring this world, and as you walk around, you know, she has, like, you know, dialogue about, you know, her surroundings and the things she's experiencing, and the monsters, which I perceive to be, like, metaphors for, like, writer's block and stuff like that, and things she's dealing with in her mind to get her to try to write her book. But the way the game is performed is you walk around the map, and if you see objects lying on the ground or, like, specific things that have, like, descriptions to them, you can press a button, which will allow you to either, if you're playing on the handheld mode, you'll see a combo of buttons on the face pad, or if you are playing on a keyboard, you will see a word, you know, corresponding with the object you see. You type it in, you'll clear out the object, and you'll get points for it, which is basically experience points in this game. There is a bar that appears after you do that too, and if you are able to find something else that can be typed in, you can chain it, get more experience points, and keep the chain going. It doesn't click as much when you're doing the exploration clears. That's just like kind of nice points, though. It's also kind of addictive to run around and keep the chain going for like the things you're destroying on the map. But in addition to objects, every once in a while you'll come across a skirmish, whether it be usually like monsters roaming around on the map. And if you see a monster, you go into typing mode and you type in a series of words to kind of think if you play Typing of the Dead, similar concept, where words will appear, you type them all out, and once you've cleared the flow, the enemy will disappear. Words start out pretty simple, and I got all cocky about it, but I'm not sure if it was due to, like, you know, the game getting changing it based on how well I was typing, or if it was just getting harder, but eventually I hit, like, a 15-letter word, and I was like, shit! I wasn't expecting that!
Does have an adaptive difficulty. It says on the Switch page, if your hands fly around or if you're a slow typist, the game features a dynamic difficulty system that evolves to fit each player's skill set. So you doing good means you're going to get harder shit.
Which is good news to me, because honestly, I think that's the most fun aspect of the game, because it's just like with like Typing of the Dead back in the day. it's just fun when there's a game surrounding it. It's just fun to type. Like, I can't explain it. I like typing. I don't really like typing for work or anything like that. I'm okay with it just because it's a function I have to perform. But typing for a game is legitimately fun to me. Like, I love it. And then the game having you do it is a good time. Now, it's not even just a matter of just typing and moving. There's also, you know, gameplay element, upgrade elements to it. Like, you learn skills over time as you level up. And then you get skill points for leveling up that can be spent on the skills. Simple things such as sprinting, things like knocking enemies back and increasing your combo time meter so you have more time to do combo work. And in addition to that, you'll also get abilities as you play. Generally elemental based, but as you play the game, you'll get different attacks. And they'll do different things, whether it be for the world, such as burning objects or freezing water so you can cross ice flows. But also combat stuff, like you might freeze an enemy in place, or when you burn them, you'll attack them, and then the next word will catch fire, and it'll slowly burn off, so you don't have to be in such a rush to type that word in, because the game will handle it for you. So it's a good way to give yourself a breather, or burn off a word that's giving you trouble, or something like that. But it's just such a fun time to deal with that stuff. And then, like I mentioned earlier, how you'll come across enemies every once in a while. In addition to that, you'll sometimes come across pads where you have to stand on them. And once you stand on that pad, enemies will start appearing from all around you. And they'll come at you at different speeds and different ways. And the words that I have all above their heads are all different. And that's when the panic sets in. Because now you got to keep everybody back. And you're trying to rush to get the words typed out. This guy's got 5 words above him. That guy's got 3 words above him. And if you typo, the game doesn't outright penalize you for it. But if you're trying to flow out a word that's 7 letters long, you type on the 3rd, well, guess what? You just typed 4 more letters after that that were all not entered because you screwed up the 3rd letter. So now you go back and fix that. So it adds a bit of tension when that kind of stuff happens, and it's cool. Now, someone might be hearing me talk about this and say, well, Parnell, I'm playing a game where all I do is type the entire game. Doesn't that get a little bit repetitive and bland? My answer to that is, no, it really doesn't, because you access new areas as you progress through the game by getting enough experience to access new worlds. You open up treasure chests that have items in them that can give you pictures and stuff like that to kind of give you nice cool things to look at as collectibles go. And most importantly, though, how many other games have a singular mechanic that should be repetitive but just remains fun because, I don't know, you're having freaking fun just doing the repetitive thing? Well, that's how this game is, too. I didn't get tired of the typing. I like looking around, finding new things, and typing stuff out. And it's not like you're meant to play it all in one sitting. Take a break, come back, play more later until you're done. It's just a good time. The only thing about it that I should mention flat out is also in a way similar to how games like Typing of the Dead and all work. So I do think Typing of the Dead may have had a tutorial sort of mode. There is no, this is a game about typing. This isn't a game to teach you typing. So don't come into this game thinking, well, maybe this will be a good way to get better at typing, which I do think it could be. Don't get me wrong, but don't come in here looking to get home row key guidance or tactics to type faster. It's going to be more like School of Hard Knife. You just better figure out how to fucking type well. That's all you got. But as long as you're interested in just playing the game, you're already okay with keyboarding, or you're not okay with it, but you do want a fun way to do more of it to get better. This is a good time and a very wild surprise to see come across the Switch of all things. But this gets a surprise buy it for me. It's a sticky wicket of a good time. It's unique, Joe.
I love it. I love it. Hopefully it does well. I would love to see this come to other platforms as well. I think it would do really. I think it would do pretty well on other platforms. Not many typing games are out there. I mean, you have MMOs where you could type to other people, but it's not really skill-based typing.
And
usually it's just shit-talking.
And I should also even add one last thing. Whether a person plays this game and they follow the narrative or not, I think it's worth noting that the person that is speaking as the writer in this game is her, they chose the perfect person. Her voice really, it's a calm, soothing voice. And when she's talking, you're like, oh, I'm really engaged in this. I like hearing more. Which I want to hear more of what she has to say. And every time she speaks,
drop
words,
it, bitch! Tired,
walking on. It's a good game. It's just a good game.
You know what else is good? Something amazing, actually. Chris coming in dropping 500 biddies on Twitch. Chris, thank you so much for coming by and hanging out with us. Not you, Chris.
No, not me.
Yeah, you're not that cool. You don't.
No.
You don't even sub to me.
I'm not that rich.
Chris's doppelganger?
There's too many Chris's here. There was we had the old Chris on the show. Now we have the current Chris on the show. There's Chris in chat. There's just Chris's everywhere. And they're all spelled differently.
It's all Chris.
That's how we roll.
Yeah, that's how you roll. But thank you again, Chris, for coming in. Thank you. Love seeing you in chat. Always good to see you drop by and just hang out with us. And I know you like my smile, so here's a smile for you.
Oh.
Next game to talk about is called Endocrisis, developed and published by Arturo Bushman. Released June 25th on Steam for $9.99. Combat against big bosses and increase the power of your ship through levels and secrets. Absorb or use your armor against enemy bullets is the key defense strategy. Chris, tell us about Endocrisis.
Oh, Endocrisis. That's how I was for the game. Okay, so Endocrisis is a shmup, which, if you didn't know, stands for... Never mind. So, this is a side-scrolling shoot-em-up, so it's kind of in the vein of, like, a Gradius or Darius or Rolling Gunner, which, you know, Rolling Gunner it is not, but... It, you know, has that going to the side and shooting lots of enemies that shoot lots of bullets that move very slow. So, you know, it's all about kind of getting in there and dodging them and stuff. But like Gradius, this one features a lot of dodging the background, you know, like things getting in your way, obstacles and stuff. But the main, like, kind of... There's a few different, like, things that make this one try to stand out. One of which is the bullet absorb system, which is necessary for keeping your ship shape. Because, basically, if a bullet is orange, and most of them are, then you can push the, it's the cross button on the PlayStation controller that I use. So I guess is it the bottom button?
The bottom button,
but I'm trying to remember what it is on an Xbox controller.
A on Xbox.
A, that's right. And then
B on Switch.
Jeez, that button. it makes you like kind of flash an absorbing shield. And I do mean flash. It's like it's there and it's gone. Within that time of less than a second, whatever bullets have come your way get absorbed into your ship and make the meter of the ship go all the way to like 100%. If you got like a few of them. Now, the things that reduce that number are both getting hit by anything will reduce it by a large number, like 40 to 60 for a bullet, and like 99% if you hit a wall, like, or you know. I didn't get a consistent like idea of like what causes your ship to go down to 1%, but it's a lot of things. So yeah, you have like a couple hits to survive before you need to refill your thing. And the other thing about it though is that the amount and strength of your shots are also determined by that number. So at 1%, you basically can do nothing. But at like, you know, 10% or whatever, you're going like pew, 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 which is not good for when you've got swarms of enemies coming after you.
Yeah.
So you basically have to get into this rhythm of absorbing bullets, like just a few at a time, and keep your ship is relatively fast. So you're able to kind of like swoop in and maybe like skirt the outside of a row of bullets and like, you know, get your health back up, and then that gets your shots back up so you can deal with the enemies and then either absorb the rest of the bullets or ignore them. By the way, purple bullets you can't absorb, and in order to not take the maximum amount of damage from them, you have to stop shooting. That is to say, the game seems to say that, like, if you stop shooting, that they won't hurt you, but they do hurt you, just less. So, and then that, of course, reduces your amount of guns that you can use. So that's, like, the defense aspect of it. The other bit of it is that, oh man, I've lost my train of concentration here. Okay.
Good every job, stage, Cole.
Every normal stage has a goal of how many enemies you defeat before you unlock a weapon. And that weapon gets added to your ship. And if you get the weapon, complete the stage, you get to keep that weapon. And so when your pew-pews get up to 100%, then you're rocking, like, extra, you know, turret guns or, you know, vertical shooting that you can do, and, you know, sky's the limit. And then, you know, whether or not you beat the normal stages, you can challenge bosses that are, like, in this, like, kind of overworld map field that you can fly around on. And once you defeat the bosses, you can move on to the next area with or without your awesome weapons. So it's all about, like, going into the stages and clearing them to get the good weapons so that you can fight the bosses. There's some things with that that tie into, like, actually the achievements, which I'll get to at the end. So here's the thing, and this is my main and really only complaint. Death comes often in this game because it's a pew-pew that, you know, has a very tricky defense system. Lots and lots of ways to die very quickly. The stages are very long. There are no check marks. You have to go from the beginning of a multi-minute long stage and a boss, sometimes even mini bosses too, which you can either destroy or, you know, if you spend too much time on them, they just kind of fly past you. You have to do all of this in order to get your power up at the end of the stage or consider the stage beaten or whatever. There's no other way. You just start stages over. So you could be 5 minutes into a stage and then you just forget to, like, you know, you forget the precise, you know, you don't get the precise timing of, like, your absorb shield, and then you die and then you start the whole stage over. That to me seems unnecessary. Because there's already, like, there's achievements and rankings in the level, and including special achievements, like, not the overall Steam achievements, but, like, in-game, like, it gives you an extra, like, thing if you pass the stage perfectly. So there's already a reward for not getting hit, but the thing is, if you get hit, then, you know, you have to start the whole stage over anyway. So it's kind of like you already have to be perfect in order to get through the stages to begin with. So it's like, why not make it where you can just continue in the stage, but if you die, then you have to start over, like, with the enemy counter to get your power up, or you just don't get the perfect or something like that. It's like the game is perfectly suited for that, so I don't know why they added that insane challenge to it, because it really does feel like...
It seems like they have it hard just to be hard.
Yeah. And in a way that doesn't make any sense within the context of what they're doing. So yeah, this game is a cool shooter with some awesome gimmicks and, you know, some impossible achievements. One of the Steam achievements I'm talking about this time, one of them is to get 15 stages perfect. One of them, of course, there's one to clear the whole game, but there's one to clear the whole game without gaining a single power up. So just going straight for the bosses with your pea shooter and wow, getting through the whole thing. Yeah, this game revels in its difficulty, but I don't understand why they couldn't just do, you know, Quarter Muncher style, where, you know, you get killed, you can choose to continue, but then you have to, like, you know,
let defeat people 110 actually enemies finish again. The game and see what you created.
Yeah, and, like, again, the penalty for completing a stage without fighting all the enemies is already that you don't get to keep the power up. So it's like they already have all of this, the reward and punishment system is already built in without having to start every stage over. Like, when you're 5 minutes into a stage and you have to start it over again, like, it just feels like you wasted all your time. Yeah. So anyway,
well, $10 on Endocrisis. What do you think?
I feel like I talked a lot about this game for being only a $10 shmup, but because of the difficulty in starting every stage over every time you die, which is extremely frequently, even if you do like get good at like learning the patterns and the timing, that puts it at a try it for me. It's ultra difficult for reasons that it doesn't have to be, but every single other thing about this game is great. So it's just that one thing, but that one thing prevents me from being able to just heap praises upon this and, and say, go and buy it. Only buy this if you really want to, like, if you're really a shmup masochist, which those people do exist.
Oh, yeah.
I'm kind of one myself sometimes.
So if they just added a little bit more accessible, just rich kid strats, let you do that.
Yeah, make it a mode or something. Like, I can't... Yeah. It appears to not be a mode at all. Like, I'm on the title screen right now, and there's nothing there.
Well, next game to talk about is called Loop Index, developed by SumPX, published by Rattalaika Games, released January. I wish it was January with this friggin' weather. Oh my god. Released June 25th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $4.99. Time to explore the virtual land of Loop Index. Its vast uncharted lands are full of puzzles to solve. Use logic and timing to clear each area. The difficulty will test your ingenuity as you explore the unique loop mechanic at the core of the gameplay loop. Purnell, tell us about the unique Loop Index.
Look. Okay, then that's done. Loop Index is actually not all that complicated, and I say that in a way that's actually a good thing in this particular case, because I feel like this works as a game that's really good for like just like a good, fun, casual puzzle solve. With the idea behind the game being that you are two robots descending deeper and deeper into, I don't know, some environment. And essentially the way you do that is by accessing the elevator on each stage. However, there's always something preventing both robots from reaching the elevator, so they have to work together to make access possible to it to proceed to the next stage. Now, the way this works is that it depends on the environment you're in. Like, you might hit switches or go past, you know, spikes that are protruding out of the ground, which a switch can be used to, say, like, make the spikes go down, things of that nature. But the hook, or the gimmick for this particular game that makes it special, is the loop that is in the loop index. So, let's say I have a robot who's just kind of walking to the right. Oh, I'm making him walk right. If I press the square button, he'll just keep walking. Like he'll walk regardless of my input. He's on auto loop. And the way it ends up happening there, the game will force you to do it for a number of reasons. Sometimes you might need your robot to do a walk because you need him to say, I don't know, walk over a switch while you're controlling a different robot to do something else. So you put him on loop, he'll start walking on his own while you're waiting for him to hit the switch, and right when he hits it, you get off and you run to the other side. Now, admittedly, you could also just turn that robot off when he hits the switch, and then you don't have to whip the timing bit. But what's the fun in that? But regardless of which, sometimes you'll be making that move. Other times, there will be platforms or environments on the stage where you can't physically control your robot over it. The game prevents you from doing so, which means you have to send the robot in on loop so that he can progress forward. Sometimes, like, to step on arrows and stuff, which will change the direction, and also you're kind of like doing arrow tile puzzles to try to figure out where to go. As you progress, in addition to just finding new things to, you know, halt your progress, you'll also come across animal friends that feature different, you know, mechanics that will need to be taken into consideration when you solve a puzzle. For example, there's the frog. He's like one of the first ones you come across, where when you bump into him, he'll hop until he hits a wall. And if he never hits a wall, he'll just keep hopping. So the jokey scenario I provided with you earlier, where I said you have to time it with the frog, sometimes you absolutely have to time it because you have no control over the actual frog. And if he's the one hitting the switch, he's going to hit it and leap right back off. So, if unfortunately, you have to be on the spikes when he gets off before you get out of the way, your robot will die. And you'll have to start the level over because both robots have to survive every time. Every time. Because this is a just together like good waffles do, baby. So, every once in a while, you'll also come across a boss scenario. And with the bosses, rather than just get to the elevator, you have to actually defeat the boss. And it's usually by way of hitting switches to trigger some way of attacking them and doing damage to them until you eventually take them out. And what's interesting about that, I feel like this game is two players if you want it to be. Otherwise, you press a button, switch between the two robots. This is one of those times where I feel like it would be more fun to just play it alone, because the single player manipulation of the characters is what generates the extra special level of the puzzle. And I say this as a guy that loves playing co-op Explosion Man. It's just something about this game where I just feel like it may just work better to play it alone. Of course, if someone chooses not to do that, there's no wrong way to eat a Reese's. So, I mean, there's no wrong way to play Loop Index either. You choose. Just, it's maybe worth pointing out to some, for someone not like they're listening, like, you know, I would be enjoying this, but this is a two-player game and I'm by myself. Like, no, this game is great alone. I prefer it alone. The bosses, however, it might be a little bit more difficult with them because you're dodging attacks with two robots, but it's a small part of an otherwise 70 level or so game. So who cares? Just do it. Make it work. It's a fun game.
Well, $5 on it. What do you say?
I think it's a buy it as well. This has been an episode of Buy It's for me. Cool. No regrets.
Hey, works for me. Makes my job easy.
No regrets.
Well, wait, no what happens? What happens to your job when I say denied? You have to go like on tour or something?
Ninjas.
Like, they're going to go have my legs broke again. Shit, Pernell hated the game.
They send ninjas. Assassin ninjas.
They come for your ankles.
They do. Next game to talk about is called Escape Sequence, developed by Sid Fish Games, published by Zetalon. Released June 30th on Xbox and Windows 10 for $4.99. It is not a cross-buy title. Separate purchase, separate achievement list. Use your puzzle skills to help the player escape the dungeon. Arrange the blocks in Sokoban manner to move the pawns, and they will move blocks that aren't directly available to you. Plan their movements well. Know when to start and stop. Let them make new movement sequences for you. Smart your way out to freedom. Chris, tell us about your time with Escape Sequence.
I am so smart. Okay. Make this pretty brief because I've been talking a lot this time. I've never played Sokoban, so I don't exactly know what they mean by that. However, this is a game where it's a kind of top down, you're in a single room. You know, your character is at one end, the exit is at the other end. In your way are various obstacles that you have to get through. Now, the way that it commonly works in the game is that there are other characters who are like blue or green or yellow, like just like clones of your, I guess not clones of your character, but they're just other sprites that are, you know, and you have to control them in order to move blocks of the corresponding color that they are. Now, the way you do this is that in your area, there are these blocks. One of them might be a kind of circle with an arrow, which, and then, you know, there might be one that's like just an arrow. And there's also blocks with the faces of blue, green, and yellow, or however many, you know, other characters there are in that stage. And anytime that you get two blocks to touch, let's say you, the circle with an arrow, you touch that, you push that block like Zelda style into the portrait of a face, you know, the picture of a face block, which you could also move, and you can move them two at a time if you want to as well. When those two blocks are touching, every time you move, if it's the circle, then the character, like if it's blue, then the blue guy is going to turn in different directions. And then when you push either the face towards an arrow block or push the arrow block towards the face, but not both the face and the turning at the same time, otherwise they cancel each other out, then the character will start moving in the direction he's facing. So it's all about manipulating these characters to get where you need them to go to push things out of the way for you so that you can make it to the exit. It starts off really easy. I'd say actually the first five levels are pretty breezy. And then, yeah, eventually it gets where it's pretty complicated. No. However, it does give you a pretty good amount of space to kind of do different things. Like, it's not just one way to the goal kind of deal. So, you know, you do get to kind of be a little clever with it. But yeah, it's mostly about like managing your own movements in moving the blocks towards the faces and stuff, because, you know, you push a circle towards a block and then you like move, you go to move this, you know, circle block out of the way, and the character's like now turn two extra times because you've taken two extra steps, and now you're like having to like redo your strategy.
Yeah, it's like puzzle programming. It's something that's hard to explain, easy to understand once you see it in motion, difficult to really master it, and annoying to play it.
It's annoying to play, but at the same time, I did feel like a lot of the puzzles were pretty clever, so I had to give it points for that. I was like, oh, okay, I see. You know, this is pretty cool. But yeah, a lot of times it was just like, okay, here we go.
I wish it were easier to control things instead of like every step making one thing.
The only thing that I would say that would have made it a lot better for me is that if the motion was more fluid, like once you're controlling a character, it's like your character takes a step and stops, takes a step and stops, takes a step and stops. And like, you know, there's doesn't seem to be any reason for that. They could just move fluidly.
Oh, well, and, $5 on it. What do you say?
I'd say it's a pretty good way to while away an afternoon. And I'd say that because I mentioned that five of the stages are kind of easy. There's only 15 stages in this game. There's not a whole lot of content, but the later stages, I mean, there's a screenshot of level 11 on the actual sales page, and you can kind of see it gets pretty complex towards the end, but you'll probably have this beaten in a day. If that sounds like your jam, then $5 is good. Otherwise, meh.
Cool. All right. Final game to talk about tonight is called Synchro Hedgehogs, developed by Grin Robot, published by Zetalon, released June 29th on Xbox and Windows 10 for $4.99. Again, it is not a cross-buy title. Separate purchases and separate achievement lists between Xbox and Windows 10. The puzzle platform game with two funny twins moving as one. Enjoy 40 levels of original design. Your logical and platformer skills are required. Manage this active team of twins tied by your fingers. Where to go first? Chris, tell us about Synchro Hedgehogs.
I'm going to say, first and foremost, that description is more fun than the game. Like, I enjoyed listening to that description. Okay. So a couple of weeks ago, I reviewed a pair of games called Butterfly, Butterfly and Butterfly 2, where the goal of it was that you could only go down, not up, and you had, you know, unless you found a warp pipe, but you had to get through these like one screen levels to collect all of the flowers in the B game. This game is exactly that game, except now they've added a second character that you control with the same input at the same time. So now you have to pay attention to what your character on the top screen is doing and the bottom part of the screen is doing, and like they kind of get, you know, all tangled up and stuff. The thing is, like, this style of game, the two inputs for one character, one input for two characters thing, has been like, you know, there's an early Sunsoft arcade game. I can't remember what it's called. I actually tried to Google it while the episode was going on and I couldn't find it. Maybe it's not Sunsoft. But anyways, this has been a thing since like the 70s. So like this is forever a thing. I've never played a game where it was two characters, one input, that was like any better than a game where it's one character, one input. There are games that do it pretty cleverly. And this one's okay at it, but it's very frustrating because you have to like manage your jumps. You also have to very early on manage jumping onto like a bee's head, which by the way is something similar to what's in the Butterfly game. But you have to like manage like jumping off of enemies and onto platforms while also getting your other character to like go in a certain direction. And sometimes you have to like do both of them at once, but in slightly different ways. Like, one character's going to overcorrect and the other's not, and you need to, like, think about it for a long time before doing it. So there's no breeziness to this thing. It's, like, very, you know, you have to be very meticulous with it, and you'll often start it over again. But yeah, on its face, it's just Butterfly, again, with hedgehogs this time.
And two characters instead of one.
And two characters for one input.
Yeah, which drives me nuts. I like the Butterfly games. I thought they were charming. This one I really didn't like because of the whole dual input thing. I'm just not a fan of that stuff. I know there's speedrunners out there who love doing the whole, I could play Mega Man X2 and X3 at the same time with one controller. Oh.
Yeah, I've seen that in the speedrunning thing. But and it's weird because these games are clearly not meant for speedrunners.
Yeah.
These are meant for folks who, you know,
want to have a nice, casual, relaxing game. But
yeah,
it gets kind of frustrating. But I don't know. I didn't hate it completely.
No.
But $5. I don't know if I would spend $5 on it.
Yeah, honestly, you're better off getting Butterfly or Butterfly 2 because there's nothing to really recommend with the two input thing or with the two characters, one input thing, because it's like they already had a pretty good little system going.
Yeah.
I guess it really is just like if you played Butterfly and you're like, I wish this was like really frustrating on top of being marginally cute and like and pretty solid, then yeah, this game's for you. Others beware and definitely don't go in thinking it's a Sonic game.
Yeah.
Although I guess Joe has been comparing it favorably to the 3D Sonic games of later years.
Yeah, Sonic games haven't been good recently. Let's be honest.
So you might enjoy this Hedgehog game even more.
You might. It's very
possible. At least you don't fall through the ground randomly.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Didn't happen to me.
Oh, geez. Yeah, Achievement Hunters, you already own both games anyway, so it doesn't matter what we tell you.
Yeah, it's you get through a few stages and you got them all.
Yeah. All right, well, that is it for this episode. Made it through another one. Chris, Purnell, thanks for being here, hanging out with me. Thanks to Tim for being here as well. No thanks to Cole, who wasn't here this episode.
We love Cole.
Taking her night off.
Thanks to Cole, and she subscribed right at the beginning of the podcast.
I know she did. That's amazing of her to subscribe at the beginning of the show. Like, she didn't even wait until we went live.
That's cold-blooded.
That's how kind-hearted she is. She didn't even wait until we went live so that we could include it on the show. It was like right away.
Yeah, because that's
that was awesome of her. And I still gave her a shout out. She's probably not even in chat anymore. She probably left like an hour ago. She's like, "Fuck these guys. I'll show up at the beginning and then that's it."
I got shit to do.
I got shit to do. I got Cozy Grove to play.
Ooh. Cozy Grove. I like it.
That's a good name of a game, actually. It just sounds soothing by title.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just realized I finally, and Purnell might be interested in this, I finally purchased Death End Request 1.
Ooh.
So now I can play through it.
I am interested in it.
Yeah. It went on sale for like $8.99, so
oh, wow.
That's
had to jump on that
system.
Steam.
Okay,
The Switch version went on sale for like $22 or something like that. But I was like,
$22.88.
Yeah. Amen to that.
I look forward to hearing what you think of it because, I mean, like I said, it was one of the games that I didn't expect to like, but then I was like, holy shit, I'm really into this.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. I was too busy to do anything but play the games I was supposed to review this weekend, but maybe I can get it. This upcoming weekend.
Yeah, I think next week is going to be that for me, because I'm going to be flying, so baby, look out. Get acquainted with gaming on a plane with a mask.
Good stuff. Yeah, stay safe for now. Enjoy your trip. We will get going with this episode. I'm going to play some new music from our good friend Blind. Let me sneak preview a demo off of his upcoming self-titled album. It's good stuff. So stick around, listen to the music. Does anyone have any final words before we end the show?
Of course, if I heard his name was Blind, I'm like, but now I see. I don't know why my brain went there, but it did. So I don't know. I think of weird lyrics all the time. Have a good night, everybody.
person as it likes to dark and gives awesome visions. We bite like sharks, chopping carpet.